This episode is brought to you by Just Egg. It's a butter egg made from plants. Bring more customers in your doors with Just Egg. Start with a free sample at ju.st/hrn.
This week on Meet and Three, we dedicate our stories to elders, grandparents, and family members who came before us.
Some people called on the phone, "What time is your appointment?" "Mine's 2:45. Our friend, the dentist, he was 3:30. And it was like a social event.
It's a small island. A lot of them I knew when I was a kid. So it was, you know, to really help them feel like they weren't alone.
It's partly this communal nature of food. And so it can operate as a bridge, not just between neighbors and friends, but also between the living and the dead.
Listen to Meet in Three wherever you get your podcasts.
As the pandemic approached our shores, which we later learned was much earlier, most Americans went into disaster mode. With behavior foreshadowed in East Asia and Europe, the fear of lockdown also brought a natural worry of hunger and food access. Where will we get our food? Will it remain available? Will the shelves be empty? Will we even be allowed to go to the store? Like many of you, I started frantically cooking and stocking in the freezer. Little did we know at the time that the contents of a freezer would in no way carry us through the weeks, months, and year that followed. As a chef, I've always enjoyed the process of shopping, picking out my own food, meeting the farmers, the growers, and the butchers that are working so hard. So how does this transition to online?
Our guests and friends, Jocelyn Guest and Erica Nakamura, have done just that with their company, Butcher Girls, transitioned to online. Erica and Joss have a combined 20 years of experience with whole animal butchery. And at Butcher Girls, they deliver local, sustainable, and humanely raised, and I must add, very delicious, as we are actual subscribers, meat and fish on a subscription basis. So my first question was going to be a serious question, but not really serious, because, as you know, we're subscribers and you've just now called us out before we actually started rolling for having the most bacon per capita in our family. We get like the double extra, extra order. But like the bacon is actually super delicious. Like, how are you doing that?
Well, let's
unpack that question for me. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, it's the same recipe we've been making for so long now. And I think we've tweaked it over the years, but the root of it really comes from the first butcher shop that I opened called Lindy and Grundy in Los Angeles. And since then, we've kind of simplified it, refined some of the ingredients, stuff like that. But it's interesting. We still have to be really careful about like how long we cure it for and stuff like that, because depending on who the pig's coming from, like which farmer, and the time of the year, we actually have to make some adjustments to make sure it's not too salty and stuff like that. So,
because like meat absorbs the cure way faster than fat does.
Yep.
Like when we started this whole experience called Butcher Girls, we popped up in our pal's butcher shop and we were basically like, which of your farmers do you think need the most support? And one of them was his pig farmer, who raises beautiful hogs, but they're a lot leaner than what we're used to. So we kind of had to, after all the pivoting of 2020, that was
the bacon pivot was real. No, but in all seriousness, I mean, your idea, the product, everything is really amazing. And you can tell it's very thoughtful. So walk us through how you all started Butcher Girls. I know you have tons of experience and most of it was in real life butcher shops and all of those things.
Well, at the beginning of, you know, when shutdown first happened, we were actually working behind a meat counter at the time. We were helping out a friend who had a baby and she'd been on maternity leave. And of course, you know, for us as fairly new moms too, we were like, of course we're going to jump in and help, you know? But we were also the first to go in terms of losing our jobs because there was an issue kind of keeping skilled labor around, right? Like businesses didn't know what the magnitude of the impact was going to be. And I mean, honestly, what we all thought maybe like, oh, it's going to be a couple months before we're all back to work. So, but at the time, you know, people were kind of letting go of some of their more expensive staff. So, we were the first to go and And we were a bit concerned, of course, because, you know, we have a child and, you know, we're a team. So we kind of sat on the couch during our 2-week quarantine period being like, well, what's life going to look like now? And literally,
I loved quarantining for 2 weeks. So fucking custom built for a pandemic. Like, so much TV. I cleaned so much. I cleaned it with Nina. Like, it was amazing. I went to more birthday parties in those 2 weeks than I've been to in years. Because everybody was
it's
like,
called vacation. It's just like, something you haven't done. Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing.
That's hilarious.
Great. I loved it. I would do it again.
You'd quarantine again. Good to know. I mean, it's basically, to me, it was like having a newborn. It's like, that was like the same thing. I had a hard time with quarantine. I don't know. I was like, oh.
So you're on the couch and you're out of work and Jocelyn's watching TV. How did you guys come up with?
We kept thinking about, because, you know, I don't know if you know, we actually swore to ourselves we would never have another retail butcher shop when we left White Gold. So mostly because we there were so many things that weren't working in that particular context. And we were like, couldn't imagine doing it any better and it working. And we were just like, you know, not that we threw in the towel, but we were kind of like, you know, it's good to put that to bed, which is why we started Small Goods to begin with. And, you know, the pandemic actually served the consumer packaged goods realm very well, I think, but we just weren't set up for it. Like, we didn't have the capital. We're literally in the process of going in for another fundraise. And and literally in the first 2 weeks of the pandemic, we were hoping to raise all this money. It was, of course, not going to happen. So it was a lot. It was fairly daunting, but we kept thinking, like, you know, one of the things that we had done from behind the meat counter as the pandemic kind of ensued and, you know, folks were starting to walk in wearing gloves and masks. And we were like, what the fuck?
I also gave like very, very shitty customer service to people who were wearing medical grade masks.
Are you a doctor? What? Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're an asshole. Like, like sausage or whatever.
But one of the things.
Maybe that's the reason we got canned.
I think you're born to be online. I like it.
People were like grabbing things off the shelf at a speed that I had not seen before. And we were like, holy crap. You know what I mean?
The pandemic hoarding was real. And Alex's opener is not a lie. We literally had all of our freezers. We had like my old freezer from my breast milk storage was like filled to the top with like soup and all sorts of shit for literally, it would have gotten us through about 6 weeks. We were thinking we'd be home for 6 weeks. Anyways,
6 weeks didn't cut it either way.
Either way, it didn't cut it.
That would have been the responsible thing to do. Like, if everyone had been on board, well, whatever. Doesn't matter. Different podcast.
But. Different podcast. So yeah. Now, so you guys are out of work. We're, right. You know, a few weeks in and obviously.
Already finished Tiger King.
Right. Like, yeah. But the thing is, we had noticed that so many people were like, just like grabbing things off the shelf so quickly that we actually had started, even before we left or before we got canned, we had started to text friends to be like, are you okay? Do you need food? What do you need? Because the grocery store, if you go into the grocery store, if you can help not going, you're not going to go. So yeah. We started to shop, like bulk shop for friends and then deliver it to, you know, to them, to their doors, like on the way home, right? So shift is over. We just like maybe bought like $500 to $800 worth of groceries. And then we were driving from friend's house to friend's house, dropping off food. And that kind of like made sense because it was just like this stress reaction that Jocelyn and I were having. So that compounded with then, you know, like sitting on the couch and then being like, shit, are our farmers okay?
Right.
Because like, now the restaurants are closed. Now it's like, we're just like trying to think of where all the food's going. And then like, you know, if we were losing our jobs, like off a whole animal meat counter, we were wondering like, okay, like what is actually happening to like distributors, to everybody, right? So, you know, as we were getting in touch with our farmers, we realized, of course, like they needed an outlet. And we just started connecting the dots. Like we called our friend Vinny, who owns Greenpoint Fish, And he literally was like, dude, I lost all my customers like overnight, like, you know. So it made sense to kind of like reach out to people and pull them closer, as close as we could, like without being there in person, right? But like, in a sense that our iteration of that was resurrecting, like, you know, some semblance of a butcher shop. So, of course we like didn't do it without, like, we weren't like, okay, lights on, ready to go. Like we had to figure out where we were going to do it. We had to figure out also the things that haven't worked in the past. Cause we were like, you know, what if we do this thing and we're either left holding the bag and no one wants any of it, mm-hmm. or, you know, like we want to be mindful and sustainable and make sure that like the entire inventory gets used. So how do you do that? So we started talking about, that's when like the whole subscription and membership model conversation started to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, between that and like, we were like, okay, like what if, right? Like customers could actually thumbs up and thumbs down on an order that they've received, you know, and kind of like change the way people shop for food. So it's been like a big, big process. But
well, I think that's a little, that's kind of where we are now.
Right.
But I think when mm-hmm. we started, we were like, shit. So like a lot of people do what we do, obviously, and a lot of people do it very well, but we were trying to think of like what kind of sets us apart. And I think it's our lack of boundaries. Just like really and truly give a shit about what people want to eat and making them happy. So like we came up with this kind of profile, like the questionnaire that you all filled out when you signed up. Like yeah. we obviously know you guys, but for a lot of people, like we don't know them from Adam. So it's like, you know, how many people do you cook for? Like, what's your comfort level with touching raw meat? Like how mm-hmm. long do you actually want to spend cooking? So it's kind of like, you know, what did we call it? It's kind of like the Myers-Briggs of mm-hmm. meat.
Yeah, it's like a dating
profile.
You
like give people a personality and you're like, okay, like this dude wants lean stuff. He only wants to spend 20 minutes.
His family wants 12
family
packs
wants
of
all
bacon.
The bacon.
What does that say about us on our profile?
Meat bar is next to your name on the packing.
But for the listeners, yeah, our family is the one with all the bacon and all the ground meat. I don't know what that says about us, but that's the truth. But it is interesting. So for our listeners, if you don't know, when you go and you sign up for a subscription, you fill out a profile and the profile basically tells, I guess what it sounds like is it tells a story. I mean, first of all, just the whole iteration of how this happened and the fact that you guys were driving food around to your friends is like the most hospitality industry people thing that you like can do. So it all makes sense. So tell us a little bit, tell our listeners a little bit about like the customer journey. How are you getting people to sign up and how does it all work now? Now that you've sort of fine tuned.
Well, so at first it was literally just like, so Erica is the master of the heartfelt Instagram story. So she drafted a couple slides and we both just like posted it to our Instagram. And like, that was pretty much how it started. So we only started with like 60 customers, which was a heart attack at the time. Cause we were like, okay, we're not going to hire anyone yet. Like we want to kind of like see how this is going. So we were doing, you know, receiving all the carcass, breaking all the carcass down, doing all the case cutting, even though it wasn't for a case. And then we would pack all the boxes and then deliver all the boxes. So it was insane. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to, you know, make sure it was a go and get systems in place before we asked people to come on board in an already trying time.
At one point we even like showed up at our friend Nina's house and she threw a basket out the window and we were like, how much meat can go in the basket, place it up like two floors without like it snapping, you know? Because like Indy's out the window. I don't know if you know those guys, but Indy's like out the window, like yelling down, like, okay, I want to make sure you also get some hot dogs in there.
You're like butchers and part-time pulley engineers. I love it.
Right. Yeah. It was so hilarious. And it gave us something like really incredible to look forward to also, because we could put our focus and our attention towards something that was going to make a difference in our lives, of course, but also in the lives of like a few others.
Like
right?
We were some of the few people that people are actually seeing, you know, right, what I mean? Right. People would be like waving out their window, like super pumped. Or we like, even in October, we were like throwing in like, you know, fun size Halloween candy at everyone's orders. And one lady emailed me, oh my God, I saw the Kit Kat and I cried. And then I ate it. And then I cried. And it's just like, really nice to be like, it's something that for us, it's just like, you know, like in the butcher shop, we would have had like a bowl of Halloween candy on top of the case, but like, we're not in a butcher shop technically, but like, we still wanted people to feel like a part of that community. And in many ways, this is a way more intimate way to interact with our customers. Like they'll be like texting us at 10 o'clock at night being like, crap, I need such and such tomorrow. Or like, how do I cook this or whatever it is? And you're like in constant contact with these people, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely true. I mean, it got to the point where I think, yeah, the whole like texting at midnight from bed, it got to the point where Jocelyn was like, dude, you really need, like, no one gives 24-hour customer service.
Yes, that's true.
That's small business. We did that for years, I feel like, starting up. And that's, you know, it's also how you connect and learn your customer.
Yeah.
I think those things are super important.
Yeah. We had a Tillet, and it was in our living room. And I remember like right before we were moving to our first office, we had like five guys stop by at 10 PM like to try on chef coats because they were here for like Caribbean Chefs Week. And they were there for like 2 hours, but they're still customers. It's like so funny because they're like literally in my living room trying on stuff. Anyways, that's long story, old story, not pertinent to today's conversation. So, I mean, it's an interesting thing because you really are giving that personal butcher shop experience, but we're doing it virtually now. And you're still, tell us a little bit about how the supply chain side works. So you're getting and like whole animals and breaking it down. Was that piece hard to figure out and to scale with this like different new kind of model?
And do you have your own, like, do you have a new commissary kitchen? Where do you work? I know that you were having some technical difficulties with the walk-in right before we got online. So tell us a little bit about where you're working and such too.
Well, okay. So, the current butcher shop that we work out of is in Dobbs Ferry. So it's just north of the city. And it actually makes it, we're fairly centrally located for what it's worth. So we can like dip into the city or into Brooklyn or, you know, do our deliveries in Westchester and stuff. So, you know, and even out to New Jersey, it's not too hard because the tap is right there. So, all those things are great. We would have never been able to pull any of this off had we not had the space to do it, right? And honestly, like, we didn't raise any money at the beginning. We threw down some of the savings that we had. We had some old customers who felt strongly about what we were doing and wanted to help and kind of like threw money at us, which was kind of amazing. Like, no investment, no nothing. They were just like, just take this money and go. You know what I mean? Like, wow. Like really, really incredibly touching stuff. Some money from our parents, like that's literally kind of what it was. But it wasn't enough to like buy equipment or like pay realistic amounts of rent. And Campbell Meats.
That's a funny measurement of rent.
Like realistic. Yeah. What is realistic? I mean, it's true. Yeah. Hopefully that's one thing that gets reset from this pandemic is rent for hospitality businesses and for the people who are, you know, for food businesses, for people who are feeding us in our communities. Anyways.
But, true. I mean, we literally came into Campbell Meats, which is what the space that we work out of now in Dobbs Ferry, to buy a pork leg to make ham for Easter. And we were like, you know, Matt Campbell, who owned Campbell Meats, he shut it down last year, but we were like, hey dude, like we've got this concept. We want to, you know, if you know of anywhere that like has a space. And he's like, oh, I'm shutting down. Why don't you just sublet for me? So it was like a fully furnished setup. Butcher
wow.
Shop.
How fun.
So yeah. Like literally this was like the easiest thing to get off the ground that has ever happened. Like, you know how like sometimes when you start a project, it's just like uphill the whole friggin' time. And you're like, well, you know, it's worth it. That's hard. And this was like, oh my God, it's so easy.
What about the, like the online side? I don't, you know, you're going from being a butcher to now being in basically an e-commerce business as well. So how was that learning curve?
There was a little for sure, especially because, you know, like, yeah, we're always going to make better butchers than administrators to some extent, right? But because of small, so, you know, J&E Small Goods was, had a little e-com kind of, you know, business going. So it wasn't ever like anything super big, but we had a guy who was helping us manage that website, and it was through like a Shopify platform. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think so many, online business owners now, or like even like restaurant owners, farmers are using Shopify as a platform to be able to get their business to grow during the pandemic. So, I don't think I ever realized how important that was going to be, like when we were first building out like Small Goods, for example. Mm-hmm. So when we thought to do it, we literally got in touch with our pal Alex and we were like, bro, we need you to do this. I don't know. Do you think you can do it? And what the hell was he doing? Like, he was also like quarantining at home. He was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. So literally within a week we had a website, and we kind of like took all of our, you know, old photos from products that we'd collected over the years and started to throw those up online. And we were like, okay, this looks good. Like, you know, and it was kind of a hodgepodge.
Well, and it's also like, people are so forgiving when you fuck up during a pandemic.
Oh yeah.
I can't see you. Like, the meat's kind of hot and you're 7 hours late. It's totally fine. So, you know.
That's very true. It is. I mean, I think in some ways it was a good time to have a learning curve because, like you said, people.
You think that will end? You think people are going back to being assholes when their meat is hot and 7 hours late?
I think the assholes have become bigger assholes and the nice people have become nicer.
I would agree with that.
I believe that. Yeah.
Change their stripes. But I think also, like, we're already working on, you know, giving people delivery windows and like blah, blah, blah. Like, that's like something we're hoping to roll out by the fall because it's just realistic. Like, when kids go back, and I don't know that people ever necessarily be back in offices for real, but, you know, we never want to be a hassle for people.
What are your thoughts about how you grow? What does Butcher Girls look like in the next 6 months or year? Is it more products, more offerings? Is it a wider range of delivery area? How do you guys grow?
So right now we're actually opening up a USDA facility in Queens in the fall.
Yep.
Mazel tov.
Yeah, we're fucking pumped.
Tell us what that means. Does that mean that you can pack food now?
Yeah. So we really want to lean into like wholesale to restaurants to like help them as they're reopening. Because I really think there's going to be, you know, a lot of people left the city, and I know a lot of people are having trouble finding, you know, skilled labor for their kitchens. So if we can help them from the protein side, I think that's something that makes me super excited. And then we want to do a little customer facing vibe.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, you know, throughout the pandemic, like it didn't feel as imminent as like, you know, now that like a lot of people are getting vaccinated and the wind is kind of like blowing in another direction. So like we get to take some of the things that are like, you know, it's like, okay, we need to fix this. We need to fix that. Like, you know, they're becoming more of a priority now that like, you know, we get to kind of like react and see like how the world is going to change and shift. But, in the process, you know, aside from being more of a distributor, I think, you know, we're trying to reimagine what the direct to consumer part of it looks like. And how, you know, like, yeah, aside from delivery windows and stuff like that, like we're definitely like taking a look at like what the user interface on our web platform looks like. We just actually shot like a bunch of how-to videos that that are going to go up on the site just to help our customers kind of navigate some of the easier things, like, you know, breaking down a whole chicken or, you know, like even pin boning like a salmon fillet, because, you know, there's nothing worse than getting like a mouthful of bones, but mm-hmm. might not think to do that. Right. So, some of the easier things like that, all the way to like how to make tartare. But the idea is that eventually, you know, the web platform becomes more of like a, a socially driven networking site so that, you know, our customers can actually interact with one another. Like, hey, I'm going to post this, like this recipe, which was like freaking awesome or whatever. But,
maybe that, it'll actually become a dating site.
Have you had any meet love connections? That would be amazing.
I wish. It's a meat market.
It's a meat market. I love it.
Goals, 2022 goals.
Totally. But yeah, the idea is that, you know, we want it to be a site where it helps people eat through the entire animal in a more sustainable way. So that means that some of the cuts that people have never heard of before, like you can access those recipes right there online. Customers can also post their own recipes as they might like. But also like the omakase part of it, which I don't know that we actually addressed the omakase box, which we should totally talk about.
Yeah.
Is, you know, that it's kind of like chef's choice, right? Like we're getting to pack the box according to what your customer profile is saying about you. So it then allows the customer that extra step along the way, just like Pandora, like being able to like thumbs up, thumbs down on every single item that you're going to get in the box. And that's going to allow our interface to essentially like create an algorithm that is just for you, right? Like it like is unique to every single customer and user that allows someone to pack a box for you that's going to be like basically perfect for you. So yeah.
So are you guys, so just for our listeners, so when you go and you subscribe, you can pick a several different kinds of subscription. And one of them is this omakase where basically it's like you pick a different size and then based on your profile, Jocelyn and Erica pick for you what you get. And so are you trying to integrate like a, are you guys just manually doing that now? Are you trying to add like a tech aspect of it? Is there, how's that all work?
Right. So literally right now, and since the beginning of Butcher Girls, it's been Jocelyn like standing behind a table, scratching her head and doing like short and math, like packing people's boxes and then looking at like a spreadsheet of like what your answers were. Right. Mm-hmm. And you as a customer can continue to update.
Granted, I would just like to say, if anyone listening to this signs up, be really honest and really frank about the shit you want and what you don't want. Yeah. Somebody literally on their profile once was like, I love lamb. So every week I sent him like at least two different lamb cuts. And then one week he was like, I don't understand why you keep sending me lamb. We literally send you love lamb. I'm trying to give people what you want. And he's like, you know, and I was like, I can't help you. Like, be honest. Don't be shy.
I think that's advice for life. Be honest and don't. Yeah. Yes. Tell the people what you really want. Okay.
So like part of what's cool about the omakase aspect of it is that it allows us to sneak a couple things in there that we really do need you to take. Mm-hmm. Because like if the world didn't want as much ground meat, like this is why you guys are also awesome for like taking so much of it, like willingly and happily. But like, you know, we try to give everybody like a pound of ground beef every single time. And some people be like, oh, it's too much. Like I have too much ground beef in the fridge. And it's like, okay, cool. But like, you know, like us being able to grind the meat essentially gives, you know, like allows us to be fully sustainable. Right. Mm-hmm. So otherwise like we're going to be stuck with like a bunch of ground beef, like in our freezer or whatever. So it allows us to kind of move through the entire carcass in a very, very different way. But yeah, ultimately, I think like that idea of the omakase box, like, you know, creates such a relationship of trust between our customers and us, you know, and Jocelyn specifically, since she's doing all the packing of the boxes.
Now they know who to yell at, though. Yeah. They're going to be another lamb steak.
Jocelyn's getting angry text messages about lamb at night.
I don't give out my phone number. That's the
other one. I'm the one. Everyone's got my number. But it's because I text everybody like a crazy person anyway. I'm like too impatient to get an email response. So I'm just like, hey, you.
We're taking a quick break from our interesting conversation today to talk about our sponsor, who is Diageo Bar Academy, and some of the amazing resources that they offer to both entrepreneurial startup restaurateurs and restaurateurs that are actively in motion.
The coolest thing about Diageo Bar Academy is that it's free to sign up, totally and completely free. They have a ton of resources for your team to get trained, and they have every skill level from brand new beginner bartenders to your very seasoned, experienced folks. So as you're going through your reopening season, this free tool can help get your staff trained or just refresh their skills.
Yeah, one of the, you know, the most important things that I garnered from our conversation with Diageo was, you know, when you're going through the process of opening or running your business, you're aware of all the things that you know you need to do. When you enlist a new resource like Diageo Bar Academy, you realize all the things that you didn't know that can, you know, benefit your business and can benefit your team and your employees and everything down to menu planning and costing.
And speaking of menu and planning, y'all know I love to talk money and saving it. And Diageo Bar Academy, my favorite tool is actually that they have a profitability calculator. So you can plug in whatever drink you're using and actually calculate the profitability of that menu item. Super cool. So the website is www.diageobaracademy.com.
And Diageo Bar Academy provides engaging learning opportunities through both physical and digital channels with ongoing support at every stage. So make sure you visit DIAGEO baracademy.com.
We were talking about scaling and we described the omakase box and you guys are opening the facility. So when you open the facility in Queens, will you still have Dobbs Ferry? Will you have both?
We are going to move away from Dobbs. But primarily because like the butcher shop we're in right now, it does not have a hood. It's not a vented space. So it doesn't really lend itself like super well to whole animal butchery. Like we have to be able to roast and, you know, like roast our bones and make stock and you know, smoke our own meats and stuff like
make
that.
Make family meal.
Yeah. What are you doing for that now? Are you outsourcing smoker or?
We do it here. Like right. Very.
You just open the window.
Very, yeah, exactly. Like the first week we set off the fire alarm because I was fucking starving and I made Erica make me a hamburger. And literally 3 fire trucks and like 5 police showed up and we were like,
hey. It's just a hamburger.
Fully shoving it in my face on the sidewalk as they walked in and I was like, sorry, bro, you want sausage?
Oh man. Yeah. So, you know, all that, but, so Long Island City, we're really, really excited about it. And as Jocelyn said, there is a small retail component. But yeah, so we're, basically, it's going to be kind of like a happy hour pit barbecue. We're going into a space that is
The retail will be in Long Island City as well, or that'll be separate?
Yeah. It's all kind of in the same space.
Gotcha.
But so it's basically like it's located on a short little street that has. This sounds kind of crazy, but it has an ancient glacial rock that protrudes out of one side of the street. So there's no driving traffic on that street. And so our landlords have been working with the DOT to turn it into a plaza. And so all the businesses facing that one little street are going to have outdoor like plaza seating year round. And there's also a brewery going in there and an espresso, like a coffee roaster going in there and a few other kind of like really cool little food concepts going in there. So we're going to have great neighbors, which we're really psyched about too.
Cool. Is there a projected ETA for that?
Yeah. So
I mean the fall generally.
Yeah. The fall. We're being told September 1. So we're like, you know,
I'm hoping for Thanksgiving.
And is this going to be, or do you have new investors for this? Is this something you're doing from the money that you've made so far from Butcher Girls? How's that working?
Yeah.
So we're just using like profit from what we've made thus far. And then we're basically like playing the like grant and loan game. Cause we really wanted this to be like so very much just us.
Right.
Like, because, you know, it's all well and good to get investors, and that's great, and it makes life easier in some ways. But I think we wanted it to just be very authentically ourselves, like even down to like a color of a sticker or a font or whatever. Like, I think that one of the things that helped us do well was that we pivoted really early, like the middle of April last year. So I think we were just like, okay, like we want to stay nimble and we want to stay like doing things the way we do things, just the two of us.
Congrats, y'all. I mean, that's like, what a way to turn this year around. I mean, I just like, it's amazing that you pivoted a business within a few weeks to start a new one, to then make enough profits to get a huge space and start a whole new, like, and, you know, grow that business. So just huge, huge congrats, and do it all yourselves. I like seriously applaud you. It's amazing.
Thank you.
I mean, TBD, early still.
So you've signed the lease on the new space?
We're about to, like, in the like last phase of it. So that's really great. And, you know, I think like we got a little ahead of the game, I think, like back in like December or so. So we kind of let the cat out of the bag about Los Angeles, as well. So that's like another part of the business that we're working on. So we're anticipating, our move out there as well, and kind of doing Butcher Girls in both cities. You know, it's so wild, like, to see how exciting it's really been for us, this past year, and how much support we've gotten from, you know, all of our, fans and, you know, customers and farmers, and, you know, it's just been incredible. So, you know, one of the things that we've talked a lot about is that we don't just want to focus in one specific region, to help support the food supply system, but really kind of take a look at, America regionally and see how we can like empower farmers to feed their people in a very different way. So, so LA is something that we've been focusing on a lot as well, while we're working on the New York, headquarters as well. So it's kind of, yeah, it's wild, and it's really incredible to see and to be excited about like how it's shaping out, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. On that note, I think let's move in to some lightning round. I'm excited to see, you know, watch you guys continue to grow, and I'm excited. Long Island City is close for us, and so we're pumped. Still be getting our business and be walking it. Still be getting our subscription and be walking it in person. Okay. So we always like to do a quick lightning round with our guests, and meant to be like 1 to 2 word answers. If you can, if you want to expand, that's totally cool too.
Okay.
What has been what's your best business resource during this time?
Oh God. Probably, I would say each other.
I was going to say gut instinct.
Oh, that's nice.
This is also like the marriage game, right?
Damn it.
I mean, each other. At the beginning of the pandemic, we're like, okay, like no asshole rules. So like if anyone's an asshole, like they're done. Like if you're a customer and you like mistreat our driver, you fired. If you're like whatever and you're a jackass, goodbye. Like it's just no more.
No.
Question number 2, what was your biggest barrier to starting the business?
I think fear of failure always. It's healthy.
It's healthy, but you started the conversation by saying you'll never do a butcher shop again because of what you saw, some of the failures in that, but it sounds like you found a better way to do it. So I think there's a lot of value in failure.
We're also like, we're kind of like dumb enough to do the same thing over and over and over.
Glutton for punishment, yeah.
Totally, totally. I don't know. For me, I think the biggest barrier was probably
1 or 2 words, baby.
Like childcare, you know, like
real.
And less about parents actually like showing up for you, because they super showed up and continue to show up for us, but like us being like, oh God, we're not going to see her for like a few days or a few hours. It's like so crazy.
No, I mean, I think working families have been at a disadvantage during this pandemic for various different reasons. And I think that's like the fact that you're working moms who started a business and are growing a business during this past year is like, you deserve a medal of honor. I think it's tough.
Baba, grandma.
Yeah, grandma, all the way.
Grandma, yeah. Our grandma peters out after 45 minutes. I don't know.
Oh, we don't give her a choice. We're like, goodbye, see you in 3 hours.
See you tomorrow.
I love it.
Favorite cut of meat?
Flat iron. I say embarrassingly because it's like kind of plain.
Tri-tip right now?
Ooh. Ooh. Spicy.
Yeah.
Right now, how often is that changing?
Oh my God, every day.
No, yeah? Come on. It changes like probably like once a year.
What's been your strangest customer request?
18 packs of bacon.
from the McCreary family in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
I don't know. I think like we had somebody ask us for like a very small pig that could fit into their oven for Christmas.
Did you find it?
No, because we also
against company policy.
Yeah, we kind of said no.
I have a cat that might fit in your oven. No small pig.
They could take my cat.
Totally. But you know, the farmer makes way more money on a bigger, heavier pig, right?
Sure.
So we kind of were like, no, let's give the farmer a chance to grow it, you know?
Right. Were they understanding? Did you?
Yeah, they were chill, I think.
Yeah, I think they went on it elsewhere. So and I was like, oh, okay.
What about what's your favorite part about being a family business?
I mean, we shamelessly whore out our child for the business like branding.
She is very cute though.
I mean, I think one of her first photo shoots was Tillet spring jumpsuit suits.
Yeah.
I know. That's still one of my favorite photo shoots we ever did. And I mean, this the one of, I think that probably was her first one because she was teeny. She was like, tiny. 6 months old.
Like yeah. Worm. Serious yeah. Worm.
Was not walking.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that. I think what I like about it is I used to be comparatively a much bigger asshole and less flexible to customers. Like if somebody's like, ugh, like I have kids, like I just need something to be easy. I'd be like, I don't care if you have kids, like you should still like treat yourself and like cook a really long meal. And now I'm like, oh my God, what do you want? Like, can I speak for you? Can I grind things for you? Can I deliver it cooked? Like, what can I do to make your life easier? Like it just.
Would you guys get into the like pre-cooked meals or like ready to cook space or no?
I don't think we'll ever do like a fully composed meal, but we'll do like centerpiece things. Like, you know, we started selling like cooked porchetta that you finish in your oven and you like puff the skin, or like we did like sous vide lamb shanks last summer because we didn't want to make people like turn their ovens on in August.
We did like a Valentine's Day feast too of like
right, components. But we didn't do like veg or anything.
Right.
Because we're trying to stay in our lane a little bit with that. But like for Cinco de Mayo, we're probably going to do like smoked beef fat with like a recipe for tortillas and like some chicken chorizo and blah, 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 like that kind of thing. Cool. So I think we'll give people the heart of the dish and or the meal, and then they can kind of go from there.
Cool. You want to do openings and announcements?
Yeah, we always like to shout out any openings, reopenings during this time. So we have Butcher Girls Long Island City coming in the fall, definitely pre-Thanksgiving. Anybody else you guys want to shout out?
I'm really obsessed with Dasha.
Oh, yeah.
Trina and Jessica Quinn are amazing humans, and they're making some kick-ass food in Prospect Heights.
They're
amazing.
Yeah, they moved into the old Mimi's Diner space, and they're really cool, like Eastern European focused. You know, there's a lot of baking. There's also a lot of like kind of like dumpling things going on. But
they're amazing.
Yeah, and they're our customer too, so that's fun.
And they did a pop up at with Eric at Ursula, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like they were cooking out of their crib for a while, and then now they're like doing it for reals. What I love is that people are like, you know what? I'm going to figure out what I really want to do and what really makes me happy. And then I'm just going to go get that. And amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And just for our listeners, because we have a large industry audience, are you already taking restaurant accounts? Have you already started, you know, selling it? Like, are you selling to the restaurant, Dasha, or to them personally, or both?
We can take people, and we've kind of like, we throughout the pandemic have hooked several restaurants up. And we do love to continue to do that.
And also it's like, if you want, like if you used to make a sausage in house and you don't have the bandwidth anymore, like we're happy to just take your recipe and make it for you. Kind of a vibe. Like we just want to make people's lives easier. And like, I think the idea of restaurants bringing in whole animals is kind of like a big ask right now. So we're happy to help complete that chain where we can, you know?
Okay.
Cool. It's a great resource, I think, for new restaurants or for restaurants that are already open and tight on staffing and such like that. I think it's really smart. Let us know, guys, where everybody can find you online, on social.
Well, on Instagram, we are at Butcher Girls Co. Because we actually lost the N in the process of the pandemic. So butchergirls.co is where you're going to find us online. And I think the New York one is like New York dot, it's like NY dot Butcher Girls.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it all goes.
I don't really know how the internet works.
Literally stop saying www in front of any website that she talks about. Always learning here at Butcher Girls.
Look, you set up a Shopify site.
Yeah,
y'all
you
are doing
like
pretty
a
good.
And e-com
yeah,
business.
I think you did good. And I do like for people listening, like the Shopify shout out, like not sponsored on our end either. We have grown our whole business on Shopify, so that is also like a super valuable,
super easy to use.
It's
super
amazing.
Easy to build, customizable.
Well, we've learned a bunch of shit about like the good apps and like what to do and what not to do. And like people that like, if anyone's having trouble and just wants to be like, what do I do? Like just shoot us an email. Like we're not like, I worked for this knowledge. I will not share it. Like we don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I don't give a shit. Everyone needs to take a run at the tree together. So
we like talk about another shout out, but you know, do you know who Girl and Doug Farm is on the West Coast? They freaking kick
I do
ass.
Not personally.
Please look them up because they're so, so incredible. They do like all sorts of really cool. They're kind of like us, but with vegetables and like extraordinary heirloom varieties, you know.
Tell us the name again.
It's Girl and Doug, like D-U-G. Like I've been digging the ground. But they, you know, I was having a conversation with them recently too about like shipping food and how hard it is to use like, you know, FedEx and UPS and like how cost prohibitive it can be. And so, you know, a lot of the networking and discussions around like what Shopify app to use to like lower your shipping costs and stuff like that has just been like a great resource to have to make friends kind of in that space and to kind of all, you know, information share, right? Because you can't take like years to like figure it out. Like, we all just kind of have to figure it out together, you know?
Agreed. We're in this together. Thank you guys for being on the show. If you're looking for us as well, we are opening soon and at Till It NYC. We really appreciate learning more about Butcher Girls.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Opening Soon is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You could also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.